So, welcome to Canda at UK Reef. I'm Simon Garnshaw, the Deputy Managing Director at Canda Consulting. Today, we're delighted to be talking to Tom Slay, who's recently been re-elected for a second year as Chairman of the City of London's Corporation's Planning and Transportation Committee. In your second year, Tom, you have an extremely busy in-tray, continuing to steer the Corporation through the adoption of its new city plan, with the recommendations due, as we understand, any day. And to add to the excitement, a new deputy, and obviously the challenge of steering the city through the forthcoming provisions of the Planning and Infrastructure Act as well. So those are some of the key things we look forward to discussing today. But firstly, Tom, as I said, congratulations on your re-election.
Thank you.
And a nice, easy question to start with. What do you look back on most fondly from your first 12 months in the chair?
I think it's... So remember, I came to the role as planning chair kind of slightly by surprise. I wasn't the deputy before, and precedent is typically the deputy becomes a chair. So I kind of got dropped in the role. And it's not that planning was entirely new to me, but planning at that level and the detail you need to be across as chair was new to me. So pleasant surprise was actually getting up to speed. We have an amazing team in the corporation who've helped me do that. People across the sector have been really helpful. I've really enjoyed it. I think it's the best job in the corporation is being planning chair. I think also just a major reflection is it works well. And we hear so much about the planning system nationally not working. And I think there are good arguments for why it actually that's probably correct. But actually in the city, it by and large does. And being part of this kind of functioning system is nice and kind of reassuring.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously a year in is also a great point to take stock. So any disappointments along the way? And if so, anything you feel you sort of really learnt from those in the first 12 months? Or challenges?
Yeah, I think the kind of pace of implementation of national planning reform has been perhaps a bit slower than those of us who are pro-growth want. And I think the planning reform proposals are welcome, but perhaps don't really go far enough to address some of the critical issues. I think in the city, actually, it will make some changes, but not major changes. I think nationally, it's a frustration. So that I think, has been a bit of a frustration. I've talked about that as well. There are things that they could have perhaps done, let's say, around Section 186 and other areas that, for whatever reason, the government didn't go there for. But I think that's been one of the frustrations is kind of when you see how a system can work well and you can see how other systems could work better, this was a real golden opportunity for the government.
You feel the sort of government could have listened a little bit more from an authority that, you know, clearly is performing very well in that respect.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, some of it's resourcing. You know, we have a well-resourced team. Yeah. That said, I mean, we've had our best year just gone for planning applications in, and already the first quarter has been our best quarter in pretty much a decade. So the team are like all guns blazing, very, very busy. We could always do with more resource, but we know other planning authorities are less well-resourced. You know, I think, for example, having a really clear policy-led city plan, our local plan, having a kind of a predictable planning regime that flows from that is the kind of golden heart of all of this.
Confidence,
And there are probably a few lessons. And I'm not saying, like, everyone should do what we do, but it wouldn't be a bad thing.
No, indeed. And on the city plan, obviously, you succeeded Trevann at a critical juncture in the process. Harry, it can obviously be a slightly odd process for people who have not been to a city plan and examinations in public. So I guess any reflections that you have from that experience, and also are you able to offer any insights as to the next steps of timings or recommendations that may be coming from the inspectors? Because you recognise obviously that's really important to the city and then the next stage of the adoption of the plan.
Yeah, I said the other day that local plans like colonoscopies, you have to have one every 5 years, and getting it passed is a pain in the backside. Actually, I think in the city hours it's taken quite a lot of time and an enormous amount of officer and member time, but rightly so, because it's being heavily scrutinized. But it's got to a good place. One of the first things I did as chair was show up to those examinations in public, and it was quite peculiar. I mean, it was kind of like quasi-judicial. You've got these kind of two long rows of in the inspectors and our officers are there presenting the plan, and you have a lot of people from different stakeholder groups, so resident groups, churches, heritage groups, who kind of try and unpick parts of the plan and explain why they don't like paragraph whatever or section whatever. And then our officers defend it and the inspectors take notes. And then the inspectors came back after that and pretty much said, we think it's sound, make a few minor modifications. That then goes out to consultation. That's a bit that's happened. And what we're now waiting for is the final response from the inspectors. And it's a very peculiarly kind of British process. You know, you're like really washing your laundry in public and everyone is in the room gets a say and anyone can show up and have a say. And it's kind of an impressive intersection of like democracy, planning, growth imperative, communities. They're all like meeting there in this room. It's a real melting pot. I mean, I suppose planning committees themselves are like that, but this is so important because it sets a plan for, in our case, right the way through from now to 2040 for like what can be built, where toll works, where it doesn't work, the kind of baseline assumptions for the amount of new office space we want. So it was super important. And then in terms of next steps, when we get those modifications or the post-consultation report back, we will put it through our internal governance. I guess that will happen in June and July, and we would hope by July, so before our summer recess, it would be adopted.
Fantastic. And obviously in the plan, one of the big challenges is, as ever with the city, is that balance between delivering your growth and heritage as well. And that's always a challenging balance. And I think we all know, and everyone knows, that relations, you know, were particularly strained and challenged and have been with Historic England, particularly over some of the ambitions in the plan. So I guess, what have you been doing to improve those relations with Historic England over the past year?
Yeah, I think we did see before my time, so I can't really speak to it in depth, but before my time, we did see a big uptick in 2024 in terms of heritage consultees objecting to planning applications or writing not quite objections, but sternly written letters. So and that was actually from their numbers. So 2024 was a nadir in that sense. Look, I mean, the city in me is under slightly new management. Historic England within Emma and Claudia is under new management. We are working with Historic England as an applicant on things like Smithfield Market and on some of our own assets of the corporation. And we're working with them as a planning authority on, for example, our new Celebrating Heritage supplementary planning document. I think that's going to be co-authored with Historic England. So we're in a really, I think, engaging, constructive place. I think if you also see Historic England's new strategy, I think they're launching it at UK Reef this afternoon, one of their pillars. And I think one of their three pillars is growth, which is fantastic. You know, we can buy up to that. The proof of the pudding ultimately will be in the eating. We will have some major schemes coming in the next 12, 18 months. It'd be interesting to see how they end up on those actual schemes. But that said, you know, I have a good working relationship with them. I think the city has a good working relationship. We're trying to do our very best to find common ground. And there are some good examples of where that works. So Custom House. Custom House was a grade one listed building, was essentially refused initially. The new applicants worked really closely with Historic England and our planning team and got to a really good place for a significant refit of this grade one listed like Riverside property. And it was unanimously approved at committee. So I think it shows if you get the engagement right and the teams will talk and have good relations, you can get these positive outcomes, even on grade one listed stuff in the square mile.
That's, I think, certainly good news in terms of, I think, what everyone wants to hear in terms of that ability to work and engage, with Historic England and build some of those bridges going forward. In terms of the city plan as well, and this is a slightly unfair question, looking even further ahead, but obviously it's great that there's a clear ambition delivering at least 1.2 million square metres of new high-quality commercial space by 2040, with much of that growth targeted towards the Eastern Cluster. But I think we all recognise that might not even be enough to keep up with demand in the medium to long term. So I guess in that medium to long term, even thinking to 2040 and even beyond, where do you think the opportunities might be to keep delivering growth, and how and where could these be accommodated?
So I and the city are like laser focused on getting city plan passed now. At some point, yes, the conversation will have to move on to what's next. you're right, that 1.2 million new net additional square meters of office floor space is a floor, it's not a ceiling. CPA have told us they think that's probably 1.8, 1.9, so let's round up to 2 like this. Mm. But that's not what's in the plan. The plan is 1.2. But clearly there's enormous demand. We have an astonishingly low vacancy rate in the high-end city core, in the towers. It floats around 1.5%, I think, at the moment, which is kind of full. Mm. Now, we've got a great pipeline of stuff under construction, 10 substantial schemes, 30 schemes of a decent size across the square mile. So this is our like year of construction, which will help alleviate that, but probably not for a few years. So there is this pinch coming, which is true.
Yeah.
Knight Frank and the FT were wrong, by the way, when they said we were going to run out. We're not going to run out. It's just in popular demand.
Yes.
Yeah. So how do we then accommodate a city that probably needs to grow more? Well, the GLA have just given us new forecasts. Mm-hmm. So they've added a significant chunk of people to the forecast. So they think that our city, which currently hosts 676,000 jobs, by 2050 will be over 900,000. That's a fair whack.
Yeah.
You're right, the cluster in the east can definitely accommodate more, and we have some sites in the pipeline. There will be others we don't know about. There'll probably be some strategic site assembly of interesting sites that can densify. Then you've got the thing the city is really good at, which is retrofitting. Yeah. So there is higher vacancy rate in grade B stuff that can be retrofitted, and some of that can be densified, so that helps deliver it. But then you're right, there is still probably a delta between what we're being told we need to accommodate to help London grow and what the square mile currently can hold. So we have to look at how we deliver that. You can't really prejudge all the work. Mm. The work is going on. Offices are working really hard trying to understand that. I think, you know, we already have a kind of a more densified area around the Fleet Valley, for example. Yeah. That's probably an area where we would want to turn our binoculars.
Yeah, great. And I know, have you, speaking of sort of, you know, building out and progressing schemes, how concerned are you about the fact that the city's approved a number of large commercial developments, but relatively few have progressed to their full delivery stage yet? And I guess linked to that, is there anything more you think the city can do to help unlock stalled sites in the face of what I think we all recognise some quite challenging economic headwinds?
Yeah, so viability is an issue. We understand it. You know, I'm talking to people in the sector all the time about this. We are looking at, for example, phasing, and we're looking at the phasing of sale payments in installments. We're thinking about that. We are trying to get our head around with the sector what the other challenges might be. You know, we're looking at running Section 106 in parallel with planning applications, so at least we don't add loads of time, because time is money. We can't control the big economic headwinds, inflation, and we have to hope what's happening in the Middle East resolves and cost pressures come down. And, you know, I don't think the developers I meet want to bank consents. I think they actually are in the business because they want to build things. And yes, it is a source of frustration to me and to the city when we go to enormous amounts of work with officers and then bring the planning committee together and give an approval and then nothing happens. And we would like to see that unlocked. So we're looking at what we can do within our purview, but it's, you know, we aren't ultimately in charge of whether a scheme really is viable or not. There's just a bit we can do, and we're trying to do that. You know, there's viability, and then there's stuck sites, and there are some sites in the square mile which are, for no good reason, not being in these ones of planning commission, yeah, not progressing. And we do remember we are a local authority, and local authorities do have certain constitutional powers to move things on, and we are looking at that. I'm not saying we will necessarily have to use them, but I think we need to send the message that we're really keen to get stuff done.
And that's certainly something that other authorities, as you rightly allude to, have used, or at least that challenge, you know, where sites have been stuck rather than, like you said, it's not the viability challenge per se. Moving on to your new deputy and committee, obviously you've got a new deputy in Madush. What are your priorities that you'll be looking to focus on with over the next 12 months as your new deputy chair?
It's a great question. I mean, Madush is, he's like an innovation and tech guy, right? So that's what he does at Lloyds Banking Group. And he was the city's representative on Innovate Finance, the fintech body, and on CFIT, which is like another fintech space regulatory kind of body. So he kind of comes from that space, which is probably quite good timing, given that AI is about to kind of like do something in the planning system. We don't really know what. No, I mean, I'm asking everyone, and no one really know what knows what is happening. Now, I've been using AI really heavily, not in any way to come to decisions, but I spent all of my Easter ingesting 5 years of public planning documents, every planning policy in the city, in London, and nationally, building a what's called a wiki. So it's like a second brain of gigabytes of data. And then you connect your AI of choice, in my case it's Claude, to that. And then you can ask questions of it. So I now like have this like brilliant second brain where if I was meeting a developer and they own site X, I can look at site X, it will pull up all the details, it will have the kind of potential issues, any permissions that have been there. I mean, I'm sure Canda and others are probably doing exactly the same thing. Yeah. And I found that really useful because it means I don't have to kind of keep pestering my officers like, can you do me a briefing on this? I can like generally get. And it doesn't hallucinate because it's not using the internet. It just uses actual public documents. So that's really cool. What will it mean for the planning system? I guess some of the repetitive analysis, some of the form filling can be improved, hopefully. You know, ultimately we employ officers because they bring professional planning judgment to the process, which requires judgment on things like, you know, considerations, materiality, etc. So if it can strip away some of the more repetitive stuff, that gives them more time to do the interesting and human part of their job. There's a risk that AI will kind of amplify those objecting.
And how you manage some of that personal data through the AI. Again, these are some pretty fundamental questions at the moment, aren't they? Yeah.
But to be your question, Majush is really interested in the space. So it's actually, I think, great timing we're having.
Brilliant news. And turning to sort of the committee more widely, obviously, by its very nature, with over 30 members on the committee, the city will be significantly impacted by the regulations arising from the Planning and Infrastructure Act, particularly the requirement to limit the size of the committee to a maximum of 13 members. What's your thinking as to how this reduction might be achieved, and when can we expect it to come into force?
So I saw a draft of our new governance proposals, which have to come through committee. And it's a bit challenging because we take quite a long time to go through governance, but the actual specifics of the regulations haven't been released by government yet. So we're kind of slightly ahead of what we think they're going to do. But essentially, it will reduce the committee down to 10, 11, 12, 13. The committee will probably decide on that. So planning applications are considered by a subcommittee. We have other subcommittees which are elected by the full committee. So our working assumption today is the planning subcommittee will be elected by the main committee on an annual basis. I would be on it as chair, the deputy would be on it as deputy. But other than that, it'll be just like the others. That's the proposal we have. We're trying to keep it simple. You know, in the past, the city's had like ideas for panels and like people representing the north and the south. I think that's too complicated. I can't prejudge what the committee will decide, but I think simplicity will be our friend in this. Yeah. And the nice thing about it coming in at the end of September, and our civic year runs like May to April, is that we only have 6 months of the new system to like test it. And then if we need to tweak it by the next May, we can.
Yeah, so you can sort of, we can expect to see it from the end of September.
I think so. I think we legally have to. The other thing to say is like, National Scheme of Delegations is much clearer. Mm. So it will define all these things called Schedule 1 applications, which just have to be delegated. The interesting part is the Schedule 2s, where it's up to the nominated officer, who will be our planning director, and the nominated member, who will be me, to decide what goes to committee and what doesn't. Because the threshold of 10 objections or more is being dropped. So like, how do we decide what goes to committee? I actually think it'll be more straightforward than people worry about in the city. You can kind of tell the big stuff will still go to committee. But there will be things that won't go to committee that did in the last year. So we had a 2-hour long meeting about tables and chairs. I don't think that will go to committee in the future. I don't think there'll be a massive change in the workload, but some of the stuff that really should have been delegated will after September be delegated.
And so that'll allow the smaller committees to sort of focus on those, you know, those big schemes.
And the city, we're blessed, right? Because we get the big schemes. We get really interesting, substantial schemes, which people can get their teeth around.
And obviously, sort of heading on to wider conversation around culture, obviously, something that I know is you're very passionate about with your sort of former role at the Barbican Centre and beyond. Obviously, culture is really important in destination city. City's got an increasingly clear direction in terms of its cultural expectations of developers. And many approved developments have included new cultural spaces. So I guess moving forward, where do you see the balance sitting between encouraging new cultural opportunities in developments and obviously the city also looking after some fantastic, world-famous, already established cultural institutions?
Yeah, well, and that is a question that comes up a lot. We kind of launched the cultural provision before we had fully figured out the back end, which was like what sites should have cultural provision on site, what sites should maybe just pay cash offsetting instead. And we're now looking to provide much more clarity around that. We need to talk to other parts of the corporation, the culture team, who have a kind of a baseline of what's there in the square mile, because you don't necessarily need a theatre in every office. And when you have these big flagship institutions like the Barbican or the Guildhall School of Music and Drama or the London Museum and others, like, it may well be better off you start to fund or continue to fund to amplify your big stuff, because actually economies of scale, you get bang for your buck. So I think we need to be open-minded and pragmatic about what works and what doesn't work on a site-by-site basis. But, you know, the thing about culture in the square mile, like, we built the Barbican 40 or so years ago knowing that it would attract talent. And culture, whether it's here or in Norfolk, where I chair a theatre, it kind of provides a kind of foundation for these places that connect people to the growth narrative. So you can have economic growth, but culture makes it a place, gives it identity, gives people like a sense of where they are. So that's why it's so important to the square mile, and why Destination City is talking so much about it, because it connects people to that story, which I think is important. We can talk about growth, we can build buildings, but actually you need something to ground people.
Very exciting. So, and lastly, a couple of quick questions. Appreciate you may have a further year. You could, potentially. So, you know, you could be another 2 years almost in the chair. So when your time does finish as chair, what would you like to do next?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, the city is all about custodianship. It's something I've learned in 13 years. I used to chair our investment committee, which is very like patient capital investment. It owns 20-something% of the freeholds of the square mile, you know, these big assets like Smithfield Market, the bridges. So there's this kind of sense of custodianship. So at the end of my time as planning chair, it would be nice to have left it in better shape than I started. And I'd hope that the last year we've had a great year. This year we'll have a year of construction. We're on a way to do that. I don't know what I want to do next, really. I haven't thought that far ahead. I know it's a bit of a cop-out.
And some last question, final one. What's your favourite development in the city and why?
Well, it's like asking a planning chairman to do that. It's like asking a parent to pick their favourite child. That said, I really like 85 Christchurch Street. It's a MIPIM New Development of the Year award-winning building. It's on site, went on site really quite quickly after approval at planning. It's a beautiful building. It's a building which surfaces, you know, archaeology, which creates new public routes. These are all the things that we're trying to encourage through our local plan. It delivers crucial office space, big uplift in office space, which is also something that we're delivering. So I think it kind of typifies, like, it touches on all the bits that we're trying to do as a planning authority in one building, and it won an award and it looks really nice.
And we look forward to you sort of coming out on site as well, I think.
Yeah, when's it going to open?
I think it's about 3 years, but don't quote me on
that. I won't be planning chair when it completes.
On that one, but nonetheless, obviously, we recognise the importance of those opportunities of you getting out on sites, you know, and evidencing those sites where progression is happening and sites are being built out in the city. So I think you said before that'd be something you're very interested in as well, isn't it?
No, 100%. I want to get out and about. I'd love to take the committee to more sites. Like I say, it's a year of construction. I saw Deloitte do a crane survey? I mean, the crane survey is like not great for London, but it's all in the city. You know, all the uplift, all the numbers in my stats pack, you know, all the uplift is happening in the city. Like, it's a buzzing place. Now, that does provide challenges around noise and disruption and servicing of the sites and dust and stuff. That is just, unfortunately, a fact of life in a busy, growing, dense urban city. And I think we do our best to manage it well. But of all the problems to have, that's the problem I'd rather have.
Indeed. It's a nice problem to have.
It's a nice problem to have.
Thank you ever so much, Tom, for your time today. And we look forward to listeners listening in and posing any further questions to ourselves that may arise subsequently. So thank you ever so much, Tom.
You're very welcome.
And giving that insight and future direction of the city.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you.